The Pro Tools Expert Podcast with Mike Thornton, Julian Rogers, and Dan Cooper.
Welcome to Pro Tools Expert Podcast number 303. It's the 22nd of January 2018. I'm Mike Thornton.
I'm Dan Cooper.
And I'm Julian Rogers.
No deals this month, but do check out the deals from our partners in the partner deals section on the deals page. A number of deals there for you to check out. So without further ado, we'll move on to our talking points. And these are sponsored by Universal Audio. Thanks, Fab.
Good morning, children. This is Fab DuPont. The Pro Tools Expert Podcast talking points are brought to you with the support of Universal Audio.
Looking to get that big analog console sound from your in-the-box mix? Well, if you buy and register any new UAD2 DSP accelerator between January the 1st and March the 31st, 2018, you'll get the world's most authentic Neve API SSL and Universal Audio console emulation plugins for Mac and Windows with a value of up to $1,196 absolutely free as part of the UAD Classic Consoles plugin promotion. Click the link in the podcast notes for more info.
Great. So, first talking point is the article, Dan, that you put up about the C24 being 10 years old, and is it time to say ta-ra to the C24? Very interesting range of comments and thoughts about this.
Yes, socials did light up a little bit.
It did.
With this one. And I was quite surprised to read that there were a number of people in the community that have bought one of these in the last year. Mm. I was quite surprised by that.
In some respects, if you want 24 faders, there ain't much out there other than the, I mean, not unless you want to spend 3 arms and 10 legs on something.
Well, this is my point in the article, is that really over the last 10 years, and dare I say it, maybe the last 20 nearly, with the Control 24 before that, these boards have always been in a league of their own, especially at their price points of about £7,000 new. With 24 motorized faders, meter bridge, full integration into Pro Tools. All right, hooey, that's fine. But yeah, there hasn't really been anything else like it other than having to buy a few artists. What are they called? Artist controls?
Mix.
Artist mix, that's it.
Yeah, you'd have to buy three of them to get the same number of faders.
Yeah, you buy three of those, or you're sort of in that territory of having to buy lots of little bits, stick them together, and you've got your own little sort of modular system. Or you go further up the food chain to things that cost 20, 30 grand plus.
Yeah.
The article really, as I said, it's kind of like a review 10 years late, really. Because I do love this thing, but I hate it at the same time.
It was interesting because you don't like the monitor section, but
it's awful.
Yeah. What was interesting is John puts in the comments that, unlike Dan, I like the monitor section and I don't have any issue with the monitor ever dial. So, yeah, it's horses for courses. But I do think that probably everybody is in agreement that the mic preamps aren't exactly its best part, shall we say.
No.
To put it politely.
They're dreadful. And I think that's a real shame because the Digi-003s that were part of this sort of family, if you will, I thought the mic pre's in those were pretty damn good. So I was really let down when I got this. And I thought, well, I've just come off a Digi-003 and now I've got my C24 and my HDX rig. Let's give these bad boys a go. I bet they sound great. Oh my God, they sound terrible. So I had to very quickly find some money to go and buy some outboard mic pre's, which stung. So I thought, well, I've got 16 here, they're going to work. But no, they don't. You have to drive them all the way up far right on something like a snare drum to get a half-decent signal coming in. That's atrocious. So you're doing that with a drum kit and you've got hiss everywhere.
So on those pre's, you used the Control 24 when you were a student, didn't you?
I did.
So comparison between the pre's on a C24 and a Control 24, were the Control 24 better?
No, the Control 24 had the Focusrite pre's and they were much, much better. And I remember speaking to the guy that still works there, oddly enough, a few years back, the C24, because he got the school to upgrade from the Control 24 to the C24. And he said the same thing. When the Focusrite ones in the Control 24 were absolutely brilliant, and the C24 come in, certainly wasn't an upgrade in terms of preamp quality. It was taking a few steps back.
Mm.
So I think they ended up in the same situation where they had to get themselves a few outboard pre's just to make up for the shoddy quality in these, which is a real shame. Yeah.
I wonder whether they were the same preamps that were in the M-Box 2, because they were pretty subpar, particularly if you were trying to record quiet or distant things. They weren't up to it at all. Mm-hmm. Which we say, you know, everything's much the same these days and everything. But that was definitely a kind of a bit of a point not that long ago where actually these aren't really good enough unless you're just kind of, you know, recording a vocal through a condenser from 5 inches away or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm.
The other thing that interested me is Slough, who is a completely blind user, also uses first Control 24 and now C24, and it sort of amused me that you know, Dan, yourself with a sight problem and also Slough, who is completely blind, both of you really. Yeah, you know, the C24 has become an integral part of your workflow.
Yeah, it's like Pro Tools Braille for us. I'm sure of it. It just makes complete sense. Even that, you know, I've got I'm not blind. I'm partially sighted. I can't see what any of the buttons are labeled as on the board at all. None of it. I can't even see where they say mute, but I know where they are.
Have you ever used a blue icon?
Excuse me.
You know, they changed the colour scheme on the icons, the D command and the D control from the blue to the black.
Yeah.
And the ES versions. And the reason they did that was because the legending, the white against the pale blue, was basically impossible to read.
Oh, God.
With people that have got some eye. Yeah.
Yeah. These are good boards. And, you know, it was really nice to see a load of comments out there. It was quite a balanced discussion going on socials where people say, oh, I love mine, or I've just sold it. And
yeah, can
whatever,
I spoil it
riddance. Yet? You know, yeah, Julian, you've got some thoughts on this.
No, spoil I have. It. And I mean, in your position, I totally get it. And absolutely, it does what you need it to. And actually, you've got some built-in kind of justifications for some of my criticisms. But I've never been that much of a fan of the C24 just because, I mean, you touch on one of them, which is quite a deep thing. And with any control surface, you've got the issue of what do I do with the monitor? So unless you've got it on an arm and you can bring it over towards you, you end up squinting at this kind of fairly distant
screen. Oh, yeah, because you've got, there's about 60 centimetres between me and the meter bridge. And I've done exactly that. I've got my display on one of those arms that I can pull in and out.
You need to do something, because, or else you can run a very big monitor at very low resolution, but that's kind of like throwing pixels away, and it's a bit galling to have to do. But no, I've got some issues with it, and my big one really is for institutional use, and a lot of these things went into institutions, like, you know, like schools and colleges, universities, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And they're just not up to it if they get used. I've seen some good ones that are in good condition, and the reason it transpires, the reason the ones that are in good condition are in good condition is because they're not really used, because this is a constant problem with students, I know from experience, of trying to encourage them to actually engage with the control surface rather than let go of the mouse. But the buttons particularly, I just find, if you've got people who are maybe a little heavy-handed with it, it doesn't belong to them, so they're not, and lots of people coming through, and things like, the first thing to go is kind of like, what's the talkback button like? And the talkback button on the C24 is different to the rest, isn't it? Is that right? I'm trying to remember.
No, it's the same as the same. Normal
what am
transport
I thinking of then?
Yeah,
so they're those little ones that can kind of, but if you're heavy on them, they can go through, and it's anything that gets used a lot.
Yeah.
And that worries me, it really does. I mean, there was in one place that I worked at, we were looking at getting one, and we decided against it. And a lot of that was because of the build quality. It was kind of, that went from the sublime to the ridiculous, just because we were looking at that. We already had a D command, which I'm very happy with, because those things are bomb proof. You can do what you like to them.
Well, yeah, there's plenty of post houses that are still running those, you know, after years and years.
But we ended up going going for something a bit more robust. And I mean, it is more money, admittedly. We ended up going the SSL Matrix, which is a bit of a funny thing. And I kind of like, I'm not that keen on them now. But from a build quality point of view, I can't fault them really. And the transport buttons, if you look at those, you could reverse a car over them. Nothing's happening to them. They're absolutely fine. The other thing is, and this is a real shame for like someone who's kind of, I mean, I'm very used to D command, D control, that kind of icon range, is you've got the conductive fader caps, but the pots aren't conductive. And that's such a shame in terms of workflow, because there's so many things you can't do. Because, I mean, this is brilliant on a D command, let's say, and you just hold down command and control and you just tap fader, not fader caps, pots to view automation lanes. And that's such a quick way of working, being able to go, okay, send level, there we go, like that. And you can't do it on that, which is a real shame. And I mean, I know that had impact on the build, on the price that they're building to. But it's a real shame not to have it. Once you've had it, it's really hard to go back.
But you remember, you know, the C24 and the Control 24 were the tier up from the Digi 002-003 things.
Yeah.
And you see, I was took all right that step. Yeah. They weren't quite big enough. But this leads me neatly to my next point, which is that I'd rather have fewer faders and conductive pots than more faders. I don't feel like I need 24 faders. 8 isn't quite enough. And if I was going to go, well, what would I go with? I'd be happy with 12. Be happy with 12 faders. So you could like maybe spill out a VCA group, but still have some faders left. For example. But yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, C24, I totally get it. For private use, I can see you can get an awful lot of use out of them. But it's the whole thing about it. It's such a big item, and it's kind of bigger than I feel like I'd need in a home setting. And I'd willingly surrender some faders into and have some slightly different features.
I will agree with you on that slightly, because when I had the studio before last, so the rented room, which was 4 by 5 meters, it fitted in that room absolutely fine. When I brought the C24 home, when I moved the business home to my previous studio, and that was a 3 by 3 meter box, it did feel a bit big.
Yeah,
it did feel a bit big. There wasn't a hell of a lot of room for that and everything else that went behind it. Luckily now I've got a much bigger studio. Now I can push the monitors, you know, behind the C24 and have space behind the monitors still, so they're not close to the wall. I couldn't do that in the last studio. So everything was sort of balanced on top of each other. If you look at any of my review videos where I'm, you know, got my mug on the face, you'd see that the Adam monitors are pretty much floating over the C24 because I was that sort of space. But yeah, it works. But yeah, it is a big beast. I do kind of feel as though I think it has gone now, actually, isn't it? It's now end of life. No, it's not end of life.
End of support,
I don't see Avid replacing this. I don't see anyone making anything like this again, because I think the mixing world is sort of going in different directions with much, much smaller control surfaces, things like SoftTube Console 1, some of those Icon Digital things, S3, you know, they're very small form factor things, you know.
I mean, but one of the big plus points is the complete integration with Pro Tools.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, until Avid are prepared to open up Yukon completely so that third parties can make Yukon compatible control surfaces, it's always going to be a challenge, because obviously you've got buying one that has total Pro Tools integration versus buying one that's not total integration.
It is amazing how much people have managed to squeeze out of Huey, but at the end of the day, it's limited, and there's some stuff it just can't do.
Yes,
and it's a pity. Because, yeah, I mean, we've been here before on, there is a huge gap for something, and it's just a matter of who's going to build it. And there's a reason why nobody else can build it. And if Avid don't think that they can get a return on it, they're not going to build it either, and we're stuck.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, let's move along. Dan, competitions.
Yes, 10 years ago this year, Russ Hughes started the Air Users blog, which morphed into Pro Tools Expert back in 2012. To kick off our year of celebrations, we are running a competition with a Pro Audio gear and software prize pot worth over $28,000. We wanted to give you the option to win one of these 18 great prizes in this anniversary prize draw. So check the list of great prizes on our win page. But don't forget to check our win page to discover opportunities to win Pro Audio software and gear from our partners in the partner win section on our win page.
Great. Okay, talking point number two. I have to say, it was my find of the week last week, but I really wanted to explore it a little bit further. And this is Alan's very comprehensive, detailed article as a case study on building a low-cost cross-platform host computer for Pro Tools. And in essence, for around £800 UK sterling, excluding taxes, so no VAT or anything like that, he has put together what is a remarkably powerful computer that you can either run as Windows, or if you are so inclined, and I do stress so inclined because it's not, as Alan quite rightly points out, it's not a simple job to do, but if you are so inclined, you could Hackintosh this particular combination. And he's done a lot of comparative tests to his main Windows machine, and it's handles itself remarkably well when you consider it would only cost 800 quid. I'm gobsmacked, frankly.
I'm just looking over it again, just because this is somewhere I haven't been in so long. I've boot camped my MacBook Pro, and it's not somewhere I go very often. Boot camp is kind of annoying on a laptop anyway, because there's various other faff things you have to do, and if you've got OS 10 on there and you're a Mac user, you just kind of tend to jump back. But it has forced me to kind of revisit Windows since Windows 10 has been available. And yeah, that's put an awful lot of my misgivings to bed. I mean, kind of we all remember the bad old days and sort of the bit of a dip, the sort of Vista stuff and things. And Windows 7 seemed a fairly joyless experience as well, as far as I could see. I'm sure some people will really object to that. But, you know, there it is. But Windows 10 strikes me as a very viable proposition. And I'm perfectly happy with it. I'm not planning on stopping using Macs anytime soon, but there's no reason why we can't use both. And if I could have something like this for so little money, then why ever not? I mean, it's, I can't see the downside, frankly.
No, it's a great article. The only price that's sort of missing for someone like me is build cost, because I don't know anything about building computers. I wouldn't know where to start. I could buy all these bits and read as many articles as possible and watch all the YouTube videos in the world. I'd still make a dog's dinner of it and probably waste a week or two trying to put these bits together, and probably waste a month of Alan's time ringing him up, begging for help. If you know what you're doing with computers, Alan certainly does. He can clearly build a very powerful Pro Tools machine on a very reasonable budget there. Do it. Why not? 800 quid. I mean, if you pimps out a Mac Mini... You know what I'm saying?
Yes, exactly.
Which is nowhere near. Territory. Exactly. Yeah,
because you can only get two core. Effectively, Mac Mini's now current model is only two cores. Four core machines are disappeared back in 2012 and are holding their secondhand value very well. You're going to have to spend all of that money and possibly a bit more to get a decent Mac Mini quad core machine. It can only take 16 gig of RAM, which I think is a bit on the mean side these days. And that's for a second hand machine that's 5 years old already.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting, and certainly even some of the comparisons. Actually, this Plan B standby machine actually wins. It's just.
It would be interesting to know what the benefits would be in, let's say, just pure power for Pro Tools if you threw an extra 500 quid into it. Do you know what I mean? Because if you were going to buy a computer, you know, stock computer, you ring up a shop and they deliver it to you, you're probably budgeting a couple of grand, maybe a little bit more. And all of a sudden you've got this option where you could do it for 800 quid if you could do it yourself.
Mm.
Well, you've got 1,200 quid left over in some respects, haven't you? So you might think, well, what could I invest a little bit more in for more oomph? That would be interesting. Again, I don't know computer parts. You know, if I looked on Amazon, I just wouldn't know what would be good components to put in a self-build. So yeah, that might be interesting.
I'm going faintly off topic here, but this puts me in mind of this whole idea, this proposition that you can get loads for your money and every year Moore's Law, etc. We're all used to one kind of version of Moore's Law, where it is every 18 months the number of transistors available for a certain amount of money doubles, and you can get twice as much power for the same money. But it also works downwards in the other direction for the same amount of money. For the same amount of power, every 18 months, that becomes half as expensive. You see what I mean? There's another way of looking at it. And I listened to a really
interesting... doesn't seem to have worked like that. If you look at, you know, all I'm sort of looking at the moment is my Mac Pro cheese grater cost me about 1,800 UK pounds sterling when I bought it in 2012. That's a Tower machine, Apple, you know, three PCI slots, all the rest of it. Look at the price of the iMac Pro, which doesn't have the slots and all the rest of it.
I don't know if that really applies on that in that case, though, Mike. Because, I mean, apart from the fact you're talking about Macs, which are weird.
Well, I'm comparing Mac with Mac, to be fair. I mean, I'm trying to be, you know... But it seems as though the high-end machines... You know, you look at the high-end Windows machines, you know, like the beast that James has got, or even the Scan Windows machine that Alan reviewed a while back.
And I want.
Then even the Scan machine is more approaching that sort of, you know, just under £2,000 mark.
£4,000 for fully pimped.
Yeah.
128 gigs of RAM and all, you know, all bells and whistles. You know, it would be the Concorde of any studio, that thing. 4,000, not bad.
And that's, I suppose, again, that's why this sort of £800 solution was very intriguing. But I think you're right. You know, what would you do to perhaps take it up a level? I think putting more processors in it, because it's a single four core. Processor. If you had a motherboard that would take two of those processors, that probably would be worth doing. My experience with Pro Tools is there isn't a huge amount of benefit in going for a mega all singing all dancing graphics card. So the card that he's got, again, wouldn't spend money there. I think probably I would spend money on a slightly different motherboard that would take 2 4-core or 2 6-core processors. Obviously, that would bring the processor price up. But again, you know, that would actually add, in this case, if you had two of those processors, that'd be another 300 quid.
Here's the thing that, what I was saying about Moore's Law and kind of the inverse Moore's Law going downwards for the same amount of power, how much the price of that drops. And there always strikes me with any computer upgrade, any hardware upgrade, and this is going slightly away from what we're talking about, but not very far, is that there's a huge inefficiency that no one ever talks about, which is like retiring off your old machine.
Yes.
And you're throwing away a load of what was, you know, yesterday adequate to do what you need it to is no longer being used, and you bring in a whole new chunk. And it always strikes me as a real shame that nobody seems to be thinking of ways that you can hold on to that, add to it, and get the two to cooperate in some kind of sensible way. just because it's kind of like, it just strikes me as the glaring inefficiency. I mean, there are ways of tying systems together, you know, satellite linky type stuff, but then also connection protocols like Mac, like Alan talks about here, with, if you've got DMA access or PCIe or Thunderbolt, that's pretty quick. And if you could access that, but between machines, but with these kind of tasks that we're asking them to do, it's difficult to divvy them up between machines like that, between kind of, you know, there wouldn't be network nodes because they wouldn't be networked, but you know what I mean? Kind of separate centers of processing, if you like. And that strikes me as the most efficient way to get the most bang for your buck is to add to your existing processing rather than throwing it away and buying some new, no matter how cheap.
Interesting. Okay, I think we'll move on to our community feedback, and these are sponsored by our friends at RSP Audio Solutions.
The Pro Tools Expert community feedback is brought to you with the kind support of RSPE Audio Solutions. Great people and great prices.
So if you're attending the NAMM show this coming week, why not visit the RSP Audio booth at booth number 16117, where you'll be able to see some of what the PMC flagship boutique has got to offer, as well as hear some of the new Result 6 monitors in the ASC attack wall acoustic environment. These things are, I mean, I've been to RSPE's main premises, and they are essentially, I mean, what they look like are lumps of foam on tops of mic stands. I'm sure they're a lot more clever than that, but it is a very effective way of improving the acoustics of a building without screwing things to walls and all the rest of it. So if you're in rented accommodation, this attack wall solution is very interesting. And these Result 6 monitors are also a very interesting, slightly more cost-effective solution to look at. So, yeah, if you are walking the floors at NAMM, then do check them out. And obviously, as you're walking around, you may well bump into James or Dan, so say hi. But of course, they may be running around like headless chickens, getting from one appointment to the other, so may not be able to stay too long chatting. But hi.
By the second day, I won't be walking, I'll be limping.
Okay, so community feedback. Julian, Bill Gould has been in touch.
He has. He's been in touch in response to Dan's post about subwoofers. He said, "Hi, Dan. First of all, I wanted to thank you for your article on the sub. I've been using Sonarworks, and this common sense approach to an issue I was having myself was brilliant to read. I have one question about your desk. Where did you get it? Was it custom made? I own an SSL Matrix, and something like this would fit perfectly in my current situation. I haven't seen anything yet that's looked so practical and streamlined at the same time. So, Dan, what have you got?"
Certainly not custom made. If you ever have anything custom made, it's going to cost a custom fortune. So when I was finishing up the studio, I thought I should get some new furniture. I don't know if you guys remember before, previous studio, I had a lot of my rack gear underneath my C24 because I just didn't have the space. It kind of works up until the point you'd accidentally kick the Avid IO and turn the bloody thing off mid-session, or your knee would hit the Tegler and all of a sudden your threshold's gone down and you've squashed everything. It's that kind of thing. So I thought, no, I'm going to get some proper furniture for the rack gear. Cheap and cheerful, really. I think they're 14U rack stuff from a popular German distributor. Not going to name who. I'll put the link in the show notes. I think they're about 100 euros each. And the C24 sits on a mixing console stand. So it's like the legs are Zs, basically.
Yeah, Z-frame stand,
Z-frame stands, they're about 20 quid. Make sure you get one that can support the weight of whatever you're putting on top of it. Do check that. I remember almost buying the wrong one a little while ago, thinking, that will hold my C24, maximum load. Okay, well, how much does the C24 weigh? Okay, considerable amount to get another one. But they're not expensive, and they are very useful for control surfaces, such as what you've got there, the Matrix, because you can put things underneath your console, like a subwoofer.
Actually, I can offer some advice on this because I have accommodated an SSL matrix before on a Z stand, much like yours, Dan. I think the one I'm thinking of was probably QuickLock.
Yeah,
and it had some kind of like bolt-onable little kind of monitor stand things that I ran.
The ones. Yeah,
I ran a bit of MDF between those two bits to make kind of like a shelf and stuff. You could put put display monitors on as well. But yeah, all works quite well. And if you're a little bit worried, something that I did in another place where I was a bit concerned about the whole Z thing, and I thought, I can see this giving way one day, is I just made up and bolted on some bits of 2x4, which I painted black so you didn't really notice they were there, and put them at the back to support the top, and just bolted them between the bottom of the Z and the top of the next bit just to offer a little bit more support. And it was very sturdy. It had all kinds of, you know, teenagers hanging off it, and it never gave way. So,
Yeah, this has been holding up rather well over the years, this Z stand. I have got a couple of planks of wood running underneath it that you don't see. So I've got a shelf of about 4 inches at the back of the C24 that I've got one of those monitor brackets attached to. But that little shelf also means that I can run cables over it.
Nice one.
From one cable rack tray to another. Exactly.
Yep.
So cable everything's tray running. You don't see it. So the floor is completely clear. And when I finished off the studio, the first thing my wife noticed was, oh my God, look how tidy it looks under your desk. A wife would notice that, wouldn't they? Because before it was cables everywhere. And we all know what cables are like on the floor. They just get completely tangled up, covered in dust. You can never get a cable out. This is really simple. If I need to just run a patch cable or unplug something from one side, put it into the other, it's really easy because it's all laid nice and flat and even. So it's well worth doing something like that as well. 10 quid's worth of wood and you're sorted.
Yeah, good. Top tip for this, drill it. If you feel like you need to kind of sturdy the whole thing up, drill it. And the length of threaded bar through the holes and then lock up nuts against each other and then lock them up the other side, outside and in, and the whole thing can get very sturdy indeed. So
okay, so questions from the community. First one is for you, Julian, from Rowan Bishop. Said, I came across a blog post you wrote a few years ago regarding the suitability of a Mac Mini for a home studio. I actually own a commercial facility and it's time to upgrade my Mac Pro. So I'd like to ask you this. When you gave the Mac Mini a test at running 64 audio tracks plus plugins, etc., it was actually a test I think the Russ did. Was there anything else helping to carry the load, maybe like a Pro Tools HD card or a Universal Audio DSP accelerator, or was it just the Mac Mini under its own power? I'd greatly appreciate the time you're taking to answer my question, and your feedback will help me to make an informed decision. I'm pretty sure Russ was running this native, as it were.
I believe he was as well. I do remember this. This was an i7 iMac, wasn't it, as well?
Indeed. And in fact, Julian, you've got a Mac Mini, if not the Mac Mini.
I think I have that Mac Mini, I think I'm running it right now.
Why I was directing the question to you, because you have that machine and...
I have that exact machine, yes, it's true. I mean, what I'd say with this is I've had no issues at all running audio, which is most of what I do. I don't run many VIs. The VIs I do run, I wouldn't recommend this machine for Dan. With his kind of work that he does, running kind of like greedy VIs and stuff. It's got a fast SSD in it. It's got 16 gig of RAM. Hasn't got the fastest processor in the world. I have no issues whatsoever, running pretty big sessions. And by that, I mean kind of like I've run quite comfortably, I don't know, 60 to 80 track music sessions. We're running as many plugins as I want to. I'm reasonably efficient with this stuff. I don't.
And
chuck
again, that's not
plugins
that,
at stuff.
That's no with no help. But that's native.
That is native. I might have the odd UAD plugin on it, but I don't have enough UAD processing power to really make much of an impression on that kind of thing, because I've only got a twin duo, so I pretty quickly run out of stuff on there. But no, most of the time, if I'm using my Apollo, I'll be using it to run one or two very greedy plugins that, and so it really won't make a great deal of difference. But if you're doing, I mean, most tracks in a session that I'll be running will maybe have one to two plugins. I tend to favour stock stuff, and then the occasional track will have three or four plugins on there. But that's kind of it. And I don't have any issues. I really don't. Discash helps a great deal, obviously.
Yeah.
And if I do run into issues, it's usually because I'm doing some kind of screen capture thing. So I'm not only running Pro Tools, but I'm running ScreenFlow, and I'm possibly running something for audio capture as well. And all of that can kind of, you know, put a bit of a strain on
stuff.
Clip
it over the edge.
and half the time I've got Photoshop and Final Cut open in the background because I'm in the middle of stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, but just running Pro Tools on this machine, I'd have no issues running audio. Software instruments, I would put some caveats in there if you're running greedy stuff.
As someone who is an HDX system, and if you read some of the articles that we've done about what would I replace my Mac Pro cheese grater with, I was certainly seriously looking at a Mac Mini, getting a 2012 Mac Mini, and then obviously getting a Sonnet expansion chassis to put my HDX card in, which they've now produced one that's a lot more cost effective. My biggest concern personally, I think, is the fact that you can't have more than 16 gig of RAM. And in terms of supporting bigger monitors and yeah, you can't put a graphics processor on it, or it's those things that just slightly concern me on a very big, heavy setup. But Julian's experience, you know, 60 to 80 tracks, no VIs with you know, plugins on each track, but not huge number. Is something to consider. It would be a slightly nervous decision to make.
I will say that if I was running 60 to 80 tracks, I wouldn't feel totally confident about having somebody in to do an overdub. at that stage,
yeah.
But these things
you'd be
tend
playing
to...
with your buffer a lot.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've got no issues whatsoever with committing or freezing stuff anyway. But no, these are when I'm talking about a big session like that, I'm talking about taking something that has been done on an HDX system and I'm bringing it here so that I can work on it and it works fine. But if it's getting a little bit peculiar or something, then it's not going to, nobody need ever know. But of course, don't have troubles. Oh, and it is quiet. That's the other thing I haven't said is they're very quiet.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, if you did go down the Universal Audio DSP accelerator route, you could get, you know, an Octo Thunderbolt connected, hook that up, and then, you know, offload a lot of, you know, plug-in resources, as long as, again, you've got the UA plugins as well. You could, you know, spread the load that way, and essentially, so the Mac Mini is much more of a tape machine rather than having to do shed loads of processors.
Something I've got to mention if we're going down this road is to say I have been playing with a DigiGrid iOS. And the combination of a DigiGrid or Wave server with a Mac Mini is a pretty tempting proposition, because you really can get that workflow.
And of course, if you own a lot of Wave plugins already, that's a very cost-effective solution, because you don't have to buy into another brand of plugins. Because, you know, as normal native users, we don't buy UAD plugins, because without UAD hardware, you can't run them. But obviously, Waves, you've got native plugins. So that opportunity of being able to run those plugins on that unit would be interesting.
Something else, of course, is, I mean, you don't say in your mail exactly what you're running. I'm assuming that you are running HD or HDX. You just say it's a Mac Pro. But if you've got some old Avid I/O boxes, then I posted about using DigiGrid interfaces to act as a sound grid to DigiLink bridge, so that you can keep your 192s or HDIOs or something, continue to use those, up to the 32 I/O level for non-HDX Pro Tools. And that's, you know, if you want to offload some processing, then if you get the appropriate peripheral, then you could do that. So you can get an awfully long way with a Mini if you want to go down that route.
I'm going to jump in because I use, I've got a Mac Mini and I donated it to my wife before Christmas because she wanted to get into the whole Pro Tools thing. So I bought her an interface, bought her a microphone, bought her a 32-inch Acer monitor, exactly the same as the one that I've got down here in the studio. A Crucial SSD, so I put that in. That was nerve-wracking. It's like open heart surgery. And Mac Mini is
taking Mac Minis apart. Yes, oh, not for the faint-hearted.
No, I was. I'll be back in half an hour. I was down here for 3 hours, Mike. Yeah. Halfway through it, I was like cursing my eyesight. Where is that tiny little screw? I've dropped it on the floor. That sort of thing. Mm. Anyway, got the SSD in there. I had a spare USB 3 hard drive, so I put the libraries that I've got in the studio down here. I've got second activations for things like UVI and ToonTrack, things I know that she would use in her workflow. Put that on there, activated that on the machine, and you know what, it's a little bullet, that machine. I'm really, really impressed. We got Superior Drummer 3 working on that, no problem. 128 in the buffer settings, works absolutely fine. Synth Anthology 2, that's a little bit of a hog, works absolutely fine down there, and she's doing 16 track sessions, and the most that she'll push the buffer up to is about 512 samples, and that's right at the mix stage.
So it sounds like you've just answered my concerns about running VI heavy sessions on a Mini then.
It's not bad, and you know, I go down there and give her a hand and look over her shoulder and make sure she's doing all right, and we don't have those sorts of problems. She's running Pro Tools 11 down there, got a spare license for it. We're just having the general Pro Tools 11 sort of problems, but not the Mac is having a moment problem. Mm. So it's a really good machine. And the only problem I'd say that that machine has with VI is it's not very good at selecting between, let's say, synth presets or things like that whilst you're playing them. It will go, oh, hold on a minute.
Just let me process that, please.
Yeah, let me think about it. And when I'm trying to do that on the Mac Mini, I'm so used to doing that when in playback, let's say I just want to switch out these drums in Superior Drummer 3, and you click and it does it because I've got a powerful machine. You do it on a Mac Mini, it goes, whoa, hold on. I'm not the big machine, I'm just a little Mac Mini. That's the only difference. So you have to sort of stop. It's just a little workflow change. You stop playback, change your preset, whatever, and then play just so Pro Tools doesn't have a moment. Okay. But yeah.
All right. Well, Rowan, I hope that's helpful to you. Dan, Tom Jenkins.
Tom Jenkins. Hello, chaps. I have a small thing I've just noticed. Have just completed a full reinstall of Yosetomi Pro Tools HD 12.6.1, the Avid Complete plugin bundle, etc. And I'm missing the Avid Tape Echo plugin. Only noticed it as it was used quite a lot in a recent session. They said it for £4 on the Avid website. Thankfully, I grabbed the AAX plugin file from an old drive and it's all working. Just this puzzled me. Mike, yeah. Any ideas?
Yes, the Tape Echo plugin is actually not bundled with Pro Tools, so that's why it's not included in the main installers, just like any third-party plugin or some of the other Avid plugins that aren't included. You know, the Pro Compressor Series, you know, Pro Series Compressor Limiter, etc. So you won't necessarily find those installers there. So again, you've proved the sense and validity of making sure that you have backup drives. When you're doing a reinstall, one of the things that I tend to do is to make a copy of the plugins folder and two specific elements: the folder that contains all the plugins, and then the other one that's well worth making a backup of is the folder that contains all the plugin settings. Because if you do wipe your drive and reinstall, you will lose all those settings if you haven't made a safety copy. So just to be aware of that, if you feel the need to do a complete wipe and reinstall, is to make safety copies of things like the plugins folder and the plugins settings folder. Okay, next one. Wade Young, I think this is going to be reference to you, Dan, because it's picking up on your song production series. Wade says, in the song production video number 2, you show that you can take a song, put it into Melodyne 4, and it will analyse the file and automatically lock it to the tempo grid of your choosing. Is that correct? If so, is Melodyne 4 Studio the only version that can do this? So, yeah, Melodyne, it's Dan.
Okay, Wade, yes, it's Witchcraft. It's why I gave it Editor's Choice Award when it was released. Mike, would you believe this? 2 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's a few different tiers of Melodyne. So Melodyne Studio is, as you can imagine, is the top tier. It's 700 or 699 euros. Then below that, Melodyne Editor, Assistant and Essential. Don't bother with Essential, it's rubbish. But Melodyne Studio, if you do have the money, I would recommend it. It's very, very good. As the name suggests, Studio, it's, as I described it in the review a couple of years ago, it's kind of a DAW because it's, you can throw in like an entire session, let's say a 16-track stem session, and you're in Melodyne with it and you can do the Melodyne thing with every component. Or you can throw in a stereo WAV, like I did in my stage 2 producing a song in Pro Tools, and it will show you the tempo as it sort of fluctuates. If you haven't done it to a click, it will show you where it's getting faster, where it's getting slower, and then you can flatten that so it's consistent. So if you've got a song that's wavering around 120, it's 116, it's 118, then it's 122, you can go, I want that all to be 120. Click of a button. Done. And then you can export that with the tempo map, import them both into Pro Tools, and you've got that all set to 1 BPM. It's very clever, and I use it all the time. That's why I'm making this producing a song in Pro Tools thing, to show you how I start a song. I always ask for demos before I start important productions, because that way the song is confirmed between me and client, or me and my wife. That's pretty much the same thing most of the time. Yeah, it means I've got the arrangement from start to end. I've got the speed, I've got the dynamics, I've got the feel, the melody lines, and then I can get to work. And if the demo's been recorded not to a click, or it's, you know, it's free time, Melodyne makes a very quick way of getting everything ready for me and prepared for a Pro Tools session.
Nice.
It's very cool. Very cool. Download the demo and have a go for yourself. It is really that simple.
Good. It is Melodyne 4 Studio that he
Studio.
Would need.
Yeah, the standalone application. Yeah. So Melodyne 4 Studio, the plugin in Pro Tools, let's say, is very much like Melodyne Editor, which is 399. If you wanted the DAW standalone side of things that I'm talking about here, then go for the Studio, which is a bit more, sure. But right. I think it's worth every penny if you do want to work the way that I work. It's worth every penny. I'd pay it again. There's no problem.
Rhys Warden's been in touch. Hi, guys. I've just purchased a brand new MacBook Pro 13-inch running macOS High Sierra, and I'm having trouble moving Pro Tools 10 across to the new system. After some Googling, should have done that first, I realised Pro Tools 10 won't work on my new system, so I'm looking at upgrading Pro Tools 10 to Pro Tools 12, and just had a couple of quick questions before doing so. Do I simply go to the Avid web store, it provides a link, and after buying the upgrade, do I install it on my old MacBook that's currently running Pro Tools 10, or can I install it on my new one, even though it doesn't have a working version of Pro Tools on it? Any help greatly appreciated. Mike?
Yeah, Rhys, you buy the upgrade, as you say, from either a dealer or from the Avid web store. When you get the installer, yes, you'll be able to install it straight onto your new machine, even though it doesn't have Pro Tools. The software isn't going to look for an old version of the software before it starts the installer. Avid doesn't work like that. So you'll be able to install the new version, Pro Tools 12, currently 12.8.3, if you buy it today or tomorrow, and you'll have no problems installing that on your new computer, and then you will be back up and running.
Teodor Amanovich Toss been in touch.
Well done.
Hello, guys. I have Pro Tools HD3 10.3.3 on a Mac 3.18 core, 32 gig of RAM, SSD disk, Mac OS 10.9. I upgraded from Pro Tools HD 8 last year to 10, and I'm not as satisfied with it as I was with 8. I needed to upgrade because of UAD and other stuff. I'm now suffering from latency issues, delay compensation, suddenly crashing, slow discs. I'm so disappointed, I don't know if I'll stay with Avid. For the record, I'm a small studio facility with a small income. Now I'm considering selling my Pro Tools rig and buying an HDX and a new Mac for a fortune. As you said, 2 years to pay it off, but I'm worried because I think Avid will stop selling the accelerated cards in a year and I'll be stuck with it. What do you think? Should I?
Yeah, interesting. If you're trying to do VIs and stuff like that, then Pro Tools 10 wasn't the most friendly versions of Pro Tools to be doing it. I mean, obviously, currently, unless you're buying secondhand, your only solution is to go into Pro Tools 12. Your Mac is way too old. The 3.1 8-core really has also had its day, which again may be also part of your problem. So, it may well be time to invest in something new. We've obviously already talked about a low-cost Windows machine. We've already talked about something like a Mac Mini. You could obviously, with your implication of a new Mac, you're potentially looking at the Mac Pro trash can, but you'll need to, if you want HDX, you'll need to go for an expansion chassis. You may not need HD these days because current, Pro Tools 12, a lot of the features that were HD only back in 10 and 11 and 8 are now available in the native version. So you may be able to get something like a Mac Pro trash can and get a decent Thunderbolt interface and go and hit it from that direction. So a range of different options there. But I fear me if you want to continue that your Mac 3.1 has had its day.
I'm going to come at this from a bad daddy point of view.
Go for it.
Using the tone that I would use when one of my kids has been a bit silly. I'm not being patronising here, but this is a lesson for you all that use old Macs like this, or I don't want to say old, ancient, 3.1 for instance. If you are going to be doing this sort of stuff, experimenting with updates and, playing with fire, because you should know better, always make a clone of your hard drive, a snapshot. Get another hard drive, it'll cost you less than 100 quid. Make a carbon copy clone of that, and you go, you know what, whatever I do, it's an experiment. And if it goes wrong, I can boot off this drive and I can get back to work tomorrow and nothing's gone wrong. Now, if you didn't do that, it's no longer an experiment. You're committing to something. And it sounds like you've sort of done this here. You're getting problems that you weren't having before. And if I was in that boat and I had a spare drive, which I've done many times when I've done big moves like this and I've not felt comfortable about it,
yeah,
I will put the other drive back in and go, it's okay, I can sleep tonight. I can get back to work tomorrow. It's as simple as that. Don't shoot yourself in the foot. 80 quid, 60 quid, whatever it's hard drive from Amazon. Spend that couple of hours making a carbon copy clone. Put it to one side and look at it whilst you're experimenting with updates, because in your mind then you'll go, it's okay, I can make a mess of this because I've got a backup. And if you don't, you're reaching out to us and we're going to be sort of saying, well, maybe you need to be spending lots of money to get a new Mac when you could have spent 80 quid and then given yourself the time to maybe save.
Mm. Yeah, you could have rolled back to Pro Tools 8 HD.
You could have gone back to it. Because I'm just going to ask this like I would again say to one of my kids, was the UAD worth this? Mm. Was that one thing that you were updating to? Because you say and stuff, and that could just be OS that you've been doing as well. Right. Was it worth upsetting the balance of your entire system? Probably not.
And of course, the other thing to bear in mind is something else that we recommend now. There's an article on the site basically asking, what version of Pro Tools works with what version of the operating system. And as a general rule of thumb, you need to be running the version of the OS that was out at the time that the version of Pro Tools that you're using was working. So don't try and run an old version of Pro Tools on a much newer version of the OS, which is effectively what you're doing now. You're running 10.9. You're trying to run Pro Tools 10 on a version of the Mac that was never intended to work with Pro Tools 10, because it was a much earlier version of the OS when Pro Tools 10 was around. So a number of things, Theodore, who's that I think you need to have a careful consider and then move forward or indeed move backwards, depending on what you want to do. If you just need a decent tape recorder, essentially for Pro Tools, then your HD8 will carry on working lots. But obviously, you're looking at wanting to be able to use UAD plugins and therefore needing something a lot more recent. Then I fear me, you end up with the issue of needing to update your computer as well to get the software, the later versions of software, to work properly.
Yeah, the moral of the story, don't put yourself in the situation where you're forced to do this sort of stuff. If you're looking at the majority of your studio, like the nervous system of it, your Mac, your interface, your main Pro Tools software, then that's in essence your whole studio. Everything's surplus to that. If you put the gun to your heads, it does look expensive, doesn't it? All of that stuff, you're like buying a new studio in essence, aren't you? So I would be looking at trying to locate old installers and spending a day or a weekend getting yourself to the system that you had before, and as I said, make a backup and then try little things at a time on a new drive and see how you get on.
Yeah,
and buy yourself time that way. By if it gives you a year, then you can save over that year to then reinvest when you absolutely have to, sort of thing, instead of feeling as though you need to get yourself into finance or debt. Don't do that.
The Pro Tools Expert podcast is created using Source Connect Now from Source Elements. Register now for your free account at now.source-elements.com.
If you've ever tried to do interviews over the internet with apps like Skype, you'll know how hit and miss the audio quality and connection can be. And even on a good day, it isn't really good enough for a long form interview. We now use Source Connect Now, which offers ISDN equivalent quality audio using a Chrome browser. No software to install. To get your free account, follow the link in the podcast notes.
Great. So, find of the week to finish with, guys. Julian, what's your find of the week?
Mine is Bassdude from Plugin Alliance, which I did a video on very recently. And I've got a fairly hit-and-miss relationship with amp sims. I tend to find that I just hate everything. And it's one of those things of, like, I don't like anything, but when I hear something I like, I do like it. And as the two best guitar sounds I've ever heard in my life from real amplifiers. One was an AC30 Telecaster plugged straight into an AC30, played by a friend of mine, and it was the best thing I've ever heard, ever. But it may also have been, I went to see Cake, who are a band I enjoy very much, and their guitarist plays a Gretsch into a Fender Bassman. Not exactly the same model as this one, an earlier one, but that again is just one. That's top two. I can't decide which I preferred. It's fantastic. So clearly I like them, and I hadn't checked out the Plugin Alliance version, and it just does that thing. And I'm not even going to try to describe it, but that lovely breakup thing that all amp sims say they do and most of them don't. And it doesn't seem to have anything to do with how much they cost or what platform they run on, but this one absolutely does it. So check it out.
Great. Dan, what's your finder this week?
Find of the week is pending, I would say, seeing as I'm getting on a plane to Nam in less than
You're 24
hours.
You're reserving judgment, are you?
I am. James is currently 35,000 feet in the air with his eye mask on and a gin and tonic on his way to LA because he likes to get there a little bit early. He says he likes to go to see other people in studios. I think he just likes to, get over the jet lag before he actually gets to the show, because when I turn up, I'm nobody's friend for about 2 hours because I'm still on UK time at whatever time it is in the morning. But yes, I've had a bit of a mundane week last week working on some songs with clients, so it was just the usual, nothing new and exciting coming into the studio or passing my wobbly eyes. So That's not a bad thing, as we're seeing quite a few teasers at the minute on socials from a few brands. Blue Cat Audio have put something out, Axiom, I believe it's called. Now, I don't know what this is, and I haven't asked them, what are you doing? Can you please send me copies of the software before you release and all that? Because I actually want to go to NAMM, to go to their stall and be introduced to it. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So that will be a find of the week, because I love that Destructor plugin. I really, really like that. It is a firm favourite of mine. So if they've made something that is taking that maybe a step further, I'm just guessing here, I will be impressed. So that could be my find of the week. Adams have just released a new set of low-cost monitors. I will be listening to those. They could be my find of the week. You know what? You're going to find out in the week, because me and James have put some time aside to be doing our roundup of the day. And as you'll notice, our voices get lower and lower with each video because it's so loud in this convention centre. I believe the last one me and James did, it sounded like we were, about an octave lower in our register. So tune into those. I believe, Mike, we're going to be publishing them midday-ish, aren't we?
We are, during the week. The following day,
Those will be my finds of the week. So, Mike, what's your find of the week?
So my find of the week is MasterCheck Pro version 1.5. MasterCheck Pro is really useful application if you're mastering for online or streaming, and enables you to listen in real time through the codecs, the things that squash the audio, the data of the audio down to get nice audio through small pipes. And 1.5 brings a new codec for the iTunes Plus format for Apple, for iTunes. And also, they've been doing some work behind the scenes with a new form of measurement called peak to short-term ratio. You'll be able to read all about that and what that's all about in the article, which will be on the site live by the time you hear this podcast. So, MasterCheck Pro version 1.5 is my find of the week. So on that, it's good night from me.
It's good night from me.
And it's good night from me.
Good night.